The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we have Joni Lacey, and she's got a brand new book. It's still a Hollister House book. It's The Witch and the Banyan Tree. Joni, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. I'm awful glad to be here.
Number three, a trilogy. This is it, huh?
This wraps it up.
All right, now, is that a good thing, or, I mean, what do you think? I mean, you get to the end of it, and you know that it's going away.
Well, you know, this was a surprise to me all along. When I did the first book, I hadn't intended it to continue, and then as it did, it was a surprise to me as well. But the third book actually felt like it was time to finish it, and I like the way it wraps up.
Already, of course, the first book, Legend of the Banyan Tree. Tell me the protagonists in there, and as the series progresses, do we see new people in this?
Yes, we bring in some new characters. The protagonist, it's kind of, I've got several characters in the first book, and of course, Eve Hollister is probably the main character of the first book, because she is what the story revolves around, her life, her decision to come back to this old Victorian and renovate, and it's her father's family home. And so everything evolves around her bringing her daughter to live with her there and to start a new life there. She's kind of had a bad record, and she's trying to get herself straightened up. Then there are a group of kids in this story, and they're my favorite protagonists. There's a group of, it's a children, boys and girls club, and they're called the VPs. So, they are the main guys in the first book. And then as the second and third book come, I introduce a few people from New Orleans.
Do you?
Yeah.
Now, why New Orleans?
Well, as you know, Mark, I'm in a band in town called Robin Lacey and DeZydeco, which we started about 22 years ago here in the city of Cincinnati. People thought we were crazy, but we played this New Orleans-style, Louisiana-style music. And we have been entrenched in the culture, the music, the food, the lifestyle. Really fell in love with New Orleans and Louisiana and all that kind of stuff. And so we just go there a lot, and I fell in love with that city because, to me, it's one of the most interesting cities in the country as far as having the European feel and kind of a Gothic sense about it. And it's a lot of fun. So it was a natural thing for me just to fall into the New Orleans thing. So this book takes place in a fictional area of Mississippi, but then it goes back and forth between New Orleans and Mississippi.
Joni, how tough is it to create that fictional town?
Well, in the sense that you have to make sure it doesn't exist. First off, you know,
from anybody that says...
You know, I did. A woman came up to me. She said, I know there's a Juniper, Mississippi. I know there is. But, buddy, I came up with that name just really from the juniper bush, you know. And I looked and looked, and I never found a Juniper, Mississippi. So I thought I was good to go. There might be one there somewhere that I don't know of. But I just kind of like the idea of Mississippi, dark, you know, deep south. Wanted to be deep south. And, of course... Talk about protagonists. I guess if we have an inanimate object or a living object, it would be the banyan tree is my main character through these three books. Much of everything that happens centers on the banyan tree, and I wanted to go deep enough south that was potentially able to have a banyan tree on the property.
How far south do you have to go to have one of those?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty far south. I don't think we have one in Kentucky.
Kind of swampland,
kind of swampy.
So the lady, she called, I know there was a Juniper, Mississippi, because I read it in the Hollister House. Is that what she said? She didn't realize where she read that at.
And I have had people, too, because I just do a great deal of description of the house itself. And a woman, she wanted to know if I... knew of the house or had been to this house because she felt like she had seen this house on one of her tours, you know, when they're RVing through the country and that. So we had a funny conversation about that. She's like, oh my God, I know I've seen this place. So I was like, well, you know, to me, it's a compilation of many places. It's just, you know, one of those kind of things. It was easy to dream up.
When you see it, you don't want to go in after dark. you know, Hollister House, your first book, Legend of the Banyan Tree, the house, pretty spooky. It was pretty haunted. Now, as you've written more books, such as the second book, The Banyan Tree Awakens, and The Witch and the Banyan Tree, how has your writing evolved, and have you made the house even scarier than it was in Legend of the Banyan Tree?
Well, I hope so. That would be fun if I did. Of course, you know, at the end of the first book, everything is all good and we're all good. And of course, in the second book, everything starts out good and must fall apart again in order to create the story. And I kind of do a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of the second book in order to bring us back into the third. And I have actually got three houses that are haunted houses in this story. Two of them are in New Orleans, and the other is Hollister House. So I kind of have, I think the one Drewy house in New Orleans is maybe the scariest. But you know, Hollister House, yeah, it's I think I keep the spooky thing going pretty good.
So are they all Victorian houses?
Sure.
What's your love with the Victorian?
Well, I shouldn't say that's not really true. The second one, the one house that's in New Orleans is more, you know, just a typical a French Quarter home. It's not the Victorian, but Drewy House is an old Victorian because it dates back. But, well, I just think that's just fun. I mean, that's nothing but Gothic. I love the Gothic idea and what can be spookier than one of those big old houses with all the nooks and crannies and things that go on there, you know? It's kind of hard to take a suburban home and haunt it.
Joni, tell me a little bit about the brand new book, The Witch and the Banyan Tree, without giving too much away.
Well, this book, of course, is the... We start out, everybody has left Hollister House at the end of the second book. They have given up the ghost, so to speak, given up to the ghost because, they feel like they just can't live there anymore. It's just too awful. So they move away from there and Eve goes to New Orleans and she stays in the house there with friends. And, this book opens up with her. She has come back up to Juniper, Mississippi. Her daughter has been called and she gets a thing in her head that she's going to move back to Hollister House and make it right. So she brings her, you know, her friends with her and they go back to the house. And she is determined to see this thing through, that she has the right to be there. It's her inherent right to be there. So they come back to the house. And, of course, then there is still battle to come. And everything lines up in such a way that, you know, they finally either they're going to win. And, of course, the banyan tree is the portal for all these spirits. And the third book, I must tell you, also jumps 10 years. So now the VPs, who are the neighborhood club, they have grown up and they are in their mid-20s, which I think is kind of interesting because now we have a different kind of relationship going on with these people. And they all band together in order to cleanse this house once and for all. So the whole thing about reading is, do they win or do they lose? And does the banyan tree go back to good or stay with the evil?
So when they go back to the Victorian house after 10 years, now, of course, in the very first book, the house was run down and dusty, and I think even stayed outside. I mean, it was so bad. When they come back 10 years later, is it, like, livable, or is it back to the...
It's livable. It's all... Nothing has been changed. Everything has just been draped in sheets. And the windows have been boarded up and nobody's been there. So they all come. There's a big scene at the beginning where they all come in. And Sippy, who is one of my favorite characters in the book, she's kind of our spiritual guide through this whole thing. She is the one who is there when they take the boards off the windows to see if the house is going to welcome them or if the house is telling them to go away. So she brings in the contractor and they're together when they unveil the house, so to speak, and all seems well to her. So they go ahead and they take off it's just dusting but everything else is there in place. Nobody's ever moved anything from the house and it's all remained the same. So they're able to come right back into it.
All right, Jenny, you know, with three books under your belt, I know we're going to talk about another book that you're going to be bringing out here soon. But I want to know, you know, with not only writing, but you do music also. You're in a band. What's your schedule like to write? When do you find the time?
Well, you know, that's one of those things. It's kind of I don't know, Mark, how I found the time. I mean, sometimes I started out, I think I got so captivated with it that, you know, time, you just kind of go into your own little zone there. And but late night, I'm a late night person, so I can do late nights. And of course, my Sundays, you know, and stuff. It's one of those things that once you get into it, you get to a certain point. And I know any of your listeners who are writers will know this, that you want to be there. You just keep thinking it. And I do much of my writing away from the actual physical act of the writing. I like to walk, and when I walk, I dream up my stories. And when I'm by myself in the car, I travel a lot in my job, and I'm in my car, I'm always thinking through the story. So by the time I sit down with the computer, I've kind of got somewhere I'm going. Although I take some turns a lot of times that I didn't intend. So that's the fun part, but I think that's what keeps you going back. Once you're really into the meat of it, you just don't want to not be there, so you make the time.
So when you're driving, you come up with this idea. I'm sure you don't have a pencil and paper and start driving and writing. I mean, that'd be almost like texting, almost. But do you have like a recorder or something? What do you do?
I've done that with writing songs. I've had a recorder, and I've done that because that really works for me that way. But you know what? Sometimes I'll talk it through. I'll say it aloud. You know, anybody who passes me thinks I'm talking on the phone or something, because if I say it out loud, it sticks. And of course, then I'm really interested in where it's going, so I don't forget it. But I do a whole lot of that, when I'm by myself.
Let's turn now to what you do in the band. Robin Lacey and Designico.
Oh.
You said, what, 30 years or better?
Well, no, it's not been that many. 22.
22. Okay.
I don't want to. 21. 22. 1989. Our first gig was at Sudsy Malone's in Clifton. And, of course, you know, Robin is my husband, and he and I have played music, been in musical things all of our lives. But this was a new and unusual thing that we created unexpectedly. Again, didn't know we were going to go there, but sure, I've had a lot of fun with it. You know, we started out really trying to do traditional Zydeco music, and that was a little difficult for people here in Cincinnati to get their minds around. You know, an accordion that's not German on stage is a little strange. So we've modified it, and I think now, I would say at the end of this point, our sound is our own. You know, we've taken the instrumentation of Zydeco is always that accordion and a rub board. That's that metal washboard that I play.
You play that.
And that's that percussive thing, you know, that is so inherent in the music. So we have that. We've got saxophone. So we do, all of our music comes with that Zydeco feel, but we have created our own sound. And I think now that, I think you can honestly say that Robin's band is his version of the Zydeco thing, and it's just up tempo stuff, and I sing, and we just have a great time. And we keep playing the outdoor festivals and fairs and that in the summertime, and do a little bit of traveling and try to keep some recording going, and just it's a place we still really enjoy being.
Does Zydeco on steroids? maybe not.
Hey, why not?
I know that you guys are in Cincinnati and the tri-state area. Do you travel outside? Do you go other places and play?
Well, we have, certainly, over the years. You know, we try to stay in a place where we can get back and forth, you know, 2 to 3 hour range. But we had a wonderful period of time in the 90s where we hooked up with an agent who got us on these Department of Defense tours. So we did overseas tours, and we played and performed for the military people. So we did Mediterranean tours. We were in, we actually made it to Bahrain and, you know, some of the Arabian places and stuff. We've had a fantastic run with that, going overseas and really just performing for military guys. So, and that was really fun because there were a whole lot of Louisiana guys in the military, and, you know, they related to the music. And so we had a great time bringing that.
So what's that like playing in like a USO type show?
Well, it's wonderful. I mean, it's wonderful. It varies completely, Mark. It's like we played rooms that were could have been 2,000. There were 2,000 people there. They'd be guys just coming off a ship, let's say, and it might be a naval place. And in Turkey, I can remember one very specific. And so that was a huge, huge show. So we would do our music, but then we found ourselves actually performing in ways that we hadn't. You know, you would talk and kind of bring more of a personal thing, because the guys are all just like want anybody from home, any kind of idea of what's going on at home. And then we would play some really, really small, you know, isolated spots where the guys get no entertainment, and the guys and the gals, and they were just so grateful that somebody was there, and we just play music that they could dance to, or just, but it was always bringing a bit of home is what our intention was. And we just, oh, it was wonderful. You know, the experiences were great, real personal stuff.
So if somebody had a band or something or other talents, they could apply. How do you apply to go to overseas?
Well, this thing came to us through an agent who kind of pursued us, and actually had a guy in Italy who was from Louisiana, and he wanted so bad to get some kind of Louisiana sound there, and he kept bugging these people, and they couldn't get the at those days. This was in the early 90s. The Zydeco and Cajun bands out of Louisiana, they rarely wanted to travel, so they couldn't get those guys to come over, and so they went with us, you know, which was fine with us. We were playing in Blue Ash, and I think they came and listened, and then it was kind of like an audition. But you know what happened? That program really went away after 9/11. Things changed so drastically that opportunity kind of slipped away. So I don't know where it stands at this point. We couldn't do it anymore, and we had some guys that couldn't do the traveling. There was just a period of time where everybody was free, because these are like 6-7 week tours. So you have to be able to go, you know, and that's kind of tough for most folks. So the older we got, it was harder. And then everything did change after 9/11 with all that, the programs.
So I guess the Cajun bands and the Zydeco bands, they wouldn't go because they didn't have gator meat in Bahrain or something, eh?
They didn't want to leave their comfort zone.
No.
If you can't have your gator meat. And, you know, the strange thing, though, I'll tell you, it's been an interesting thing watching that change, because as the world changes, all these guys, especially the tragedy of Katrina, suddenly those guys started traveling everywhere, guys that really routinely stayed in southern Louisiana and that whole southern Zydeco area and the Cajun areas and stuff. They were so sought after, and of course people brought them to California, they brought them all over the United States. That really changed things as far as getting the music out there more broadly from that disastrous situation. You know, it was like people, they couldn't play at home anymore, things had changed and all this kind of stuff. So now I think there's a great deal more of it that's available in that. But sure, you know, wanted to stay where things are, you know, like they like them.
So you probably see an influx of people, maybe not only at your concerts, but maybe interested in the Zydeco music itself.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, in your book, the Hollister series, Hollister House series, have you added the Zydeco music, the Cajun music in here? I mean, do you bring that to life in your stories?
Just slightly. Of course, you know, Eve Hollister is a musician. She is a violinist, but she does throw a couple parties, what they call fade au dos, and I do bring in a band, you know, with that kind of genre. So, you know, I bring it in a little bit. And especially when, in the second book, when Eve and Sippy go to New Orleans, then I kind of bring in the sounds of the, you know, what would be playing on the jukebox, or, you know, the crawfish when they're going getting some mud bugs, you know, and the food and the whole thing, you know. So certainly there's a lot of, and it goes to, I, of course, bring them down at Mardi Gras time to New Orleans in the second book. So there's a whole lot of the Mardi Gras thing. You're going to get a little taste of Mardi Gras Indians and the whole thing. I hope I've done that well, because it was really important to me to try not to be too cliche with all the cliche things that go along with New Orleans and Mardi Gras, but to keep the story kind of vibrant as it goes through that amazing situation that's happening. And it keeps the mystery of the story going along during the Mardi Gras thing. So I certainly do try to paint that picture and bring the music in as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you do it so well, I can almost hear the music coming out of the area there. But, you know, you also bring to life not only the music in there, but the setting, the banyan tree, the house and everything. How do you write so visual?
Oh, that's an interesting question, because I do see it in my head, and then it's a matter of being able to interpret it, I think. Sometimes I listen to audio stuff. I've got some some interesting CDs that I've listened to when I'm really trying to create something that's kind of bringing some tension to it. And but I don't know, Mark, how to explain. I just do see it. I see it in really clearly, and then I struggle with trying to get that what's in my head on that page.
So do you put it down on the page? Do you come back maybe later and say, maybe I can do this a little better?
Sure.
Is there a lot of editing that you have to do?
All constantly. I never stop with that editing. And the thing that's been really cool is to really talk to other writers and to know that everybody seems to be in that mode, you know. There's a whole lot of that. And sometimes I'll move whole sections around and, you know, because I think, oh, this would work better here, or I've gotten this confused, or this, because the story is pretty convoluted. I mean, it's a pretty wild story. So it was very, that was the challenge for me to get my act together on the chronology of things, and that I just wanted the reader to not get terribly confused as they're going through it, you know. So, and there are a lot of characters, you know, there's some possession that goes on here. So we have a few folks that are not with us really in the physical, but they seem to show up in the spiritual. So I want to keep those characters there as alive to me as the physical characters are. So that was kind of fun bringing in those people that aren't of this time period.
So do you have a hard time sleeping sometimes with those people in your head?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Hollister House, of course, The Witch and the Banyan Tree. It's brand new. It's part three of the Hollister House trilogy. When you're out on concert, and I'm sure you probably talk a little bit about the book, you have people that come up to you that are readers of the book, and they find out that part three is all. What do they say?
Well, I get a lot of, you know, say it ain't so. But I did have a young woman. I was at the public library. She came up, and it was really kind of interesting because she said, you know, I think it's just great that you actually finished the third book, because these people that just keep going on and on and on, she says, sometimes you just got to wrap it up. And I told her, this is how I felt, because people were like, oh, this, a lot of folks have said to me, oh, this doesn't have to be the end, doesn't have to be the end. But this is how it feels to me. I feel like it is the end, and I'm happy with it. So I don't think I'm going to continue on with it. So, you know, you never know, but that's the way it feels to me right now.
Well, you know, like with you, the characters, they come to life with the readers, and the readers fall in love with these characters. Do some readers maybe fall in love more with the readers than maybe the author sometimes? You know, I don't know.
Well, I'm sure. One of the greatest moments for me when I first kind of jumped into this and got the first one published, it was I had a dinner with some friends, and they're all close friends, and all of those people at the table had a different character that was their favorite character that they totally related to. And I was really taken aback by that, because I kind of thought I could have guessed which one they liked or didn't like or whatever. And of course, I always thought, you know, if I hear from, you know, I had some readers that would help me through this. You know, you pick people to read what you're writing and say, am I on the right track? Do you not like this character? Do you not like that character? And if I'd had several of them say, I don't like this character, I didn't understand this character, then you really have to go back and revisit that. Maybe you're not getting something across. But it was always varied and across the board on, man, I love Sippy, or I love Eve, I relate to Eve, and I love those kids, and that kind of thing. So that was really fun for me. I felt like I was kind of catching a lot of different people. So that was a really good thing for me.
Well, my favorite's always been Eve, and I think it will be always.
Good.
Joni, tell me now a little bit about where I can get the book. I know that you have a website, and maybe some of your Zydeco music, too.
Okay. Well, the band definitely has a website. It's robinlacy.com, and that's R-O-B-I-N-L-A-C-Y. And you can go there. There's a link to Joni. You can go and order the book. You can get an autograph book from there. And you can get all the Zydeco music there, of course. We've had that website up and running for a long time, so it's very much together. Myself, I am introducing a website for myself. It will be JoniLacy.com. That's JoaniLacy. And from there, also, you'll be able to order the books. And I'm going to publish on that website some poetry. I have a lot of poetry. I've got short stories. I'm going to put some things on there from time to time that I hope to invite people to come and visit that website. I've got a Christmas story that I've just finished up. It's a short story, and they can print out the story if they like. But I'm hoping to keep that alive, and maybe if I get enough interest, you know, to make that kind of a interactive kind of site. But also, the book is available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and of course, in the publisher iUniverse. So it's available in all those typical online places.
All right, now, Hollister House, of course, the brand new book, The Witch and the Banyan Tree, poetry. I mean, that's basically lyrics to songs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if somebody out there says, you know what, this is a fantastic poem, and they put music to it? I mean, is that is that doable?
I think that's doable.
Just get in touch with you.
I think that's doable, yeah. In fact, the second poem I think I've got on that website is a song.
Is it?
Yes. And Ricky Layton, our guitar player, I gave it to him because I really loved the lyrics. It's called Cold Blue Heart. And I just, I couldn't come up with the melody that I wanted. That wasn't coming to me. I threw it at Ricky, and I just love what he came up with. So we do a thing, Ricky and Robin and I do a thing. It's a trio where we're not the full band, and we just play some old songs and that. But we do that song there, and I think it works great. But I'm going to post it on the website just because I love the. But now to me, that is a song rather than it started out as a poem, but it is a song.
Now are all your poems have music to them? That are on there?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
This is part three of the Hollister House trilogy, Hollister House, The Witch, and The Banyan Tree. It's a novel by Joni Lacey. If you've never caught Robin Lacey and DeZydeco, you're going to have to do that. That's a fun concert to go to. Hey, you might even get some beads thrown out to you. I know Robin, he goes out in the audience and he gives out beads and stuff too.
Oh, yeah, kids love it.
Kids love it. I love it. Maybe I'm just a big kid. But anyway, Hollister House, The Witch and the Banyan Tree. Hey, part three, check out one and two also. Joni, thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you, Mark. It's such a pleasure. Love what you guys do here and really appreciate you letting me come on.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Joni Lacey, author of her brand new book, Hollister House, The Witch and the Banyan Tree. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.